Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to this week's episode of the Live Your Truth Now podcast. I'm Mike Liguori, and joining me today is the one and only Mary Lemmer. Mary, welcome to the show. I'm so glad to have you here.
Thanks, Mike. It's great to be here.
Last time we talked about this concept that I have never heard before when it came to improv. And you're an improv master. I would actually probably argue you are a master of your craft.
Whoa.
You truly are a master of your craft. What I love about your work in this improv, so you said something to me on this call, and I'm still mind blown from this, is you said improv is going to be the next meditation. And so I sat and thought about that. And today, ladies and gentlemen, Mary and I are going to cover this. I have no idea where it's going to lead us. All I know is, in true improv fashion, I have no idea where this is going to lead us. But what I will say is this, is that Mary has graced the TED Talk stage. She's worked with some of the biggest companies in the world, sharing improv and the power of improv. And we're also going to be talking about her new book, How to Handle Anything. So, Mary, with that being said, let's dive on in.
Awesome.
Tell me why you think improv is going to be the next meditation. That is a really bold statement that you made to me.
I'm realizing how bold it is and how you laid it out there. I'm like, wow. Well, I think it's come to me over years and years of doing this work and seeing what the impact of improvising does for people and learning more and more about what the impact of meditation is, right? And we know more and more than ever, we know about the power of meditating and what it does to the mind and how it, you know, so many people are out there saying how it transformed their lives when they started meditating, and there's all these schools and programs and apps that you can use to meditate. And it's become more prolific as we've gotten more research about what's actually happening and data that supports meditating as a practice for kind of connecting to self, right? And so I've been improvising now for almost 15 years in terms of like taking classes and now practicing it, you know, in my own life. And just the thing about improv that it's like meditating with others, right? Because when we're meditating, we're being present to whatever is, right? Thoughts come, we're like, okay, and they float past like a cloud. And I'm not an expert meditator, so I'm not going to go into like all the details of that. I've found that improvising is a way of being present with others, right? And people gain some of those similar benefits of, you know, feeling more calm in chaotic situations. Being able to be present with whatever the emotion is that they're experiencing. And the thing that improv does in addition to meditation is it allows us to go into social situations and be present in those moments, right? So sure, when you sit in your room or wherever and you're meditating, that's great. But then what happens when you get into a situation with a colleague or a friend that's like involves maybe a difficult conversation? Does that, like, what meditation certainly can help build kind of the resilience to deal with those things. When we're improvising, we get to actually, you know, practice those kinds of situations in this fictitious environment. So it's almost like a social meditation. And so I think that's why I make that claim is like, and improv is in its nascency. It's early on in having some of this research about the power of it, what it's doing to the mind, the benefits of it for health and well-being. So I think as the path went with meditating, the more we learn, the more we experience, the more research behind it, the more improv will become like the next meditation, because we'll have this, you know, it'll be where in maybe 5 years, 10 years, I don't know what the time frame is, but improv will be where meditating is now, where it's like, of course I would practice that to help me, you know, learn about myself, manage my own emotions and psychology, and also interact socially with others.
There's also something about improv that I have found really powerful, which is the ability to draw you back to the present moment. And just like meditation, the draw back to where you are right now. I find that with improv, though, it's being able to navigate with what's currently happening to you in real time. Where I feel like meditation, in my perspective, meditation is just helping you just come back to now and be an observer of what's happening, where improv is actually being not just an observer, but also going with the fluidity of the situation and being able to create.
Yes.
And I think something about creation that I really, that I love, and I've been diving super deep in creativity and reading Rick Rubin's book, which by the way, it's, it's a, wow. It's,
love
first
it.
Of all, he's just amazing. And second of all, the way that he talks about creativity and creating from, for you, not from the audience. That's what I love about improv. Yeah, improv is very much like, I don't know how the crowd is going to react to this. I don't know how other people are going to react. All I know is that I am going with this situation. And I want to ask you more about, with improv specifically, we have a lot of entrepreneurs that listen to the podcast, as you know. They're sitting there going like, okay, I do all the things. I meditate. I journal and I fucking cold plunge. Like we've talked about it extensively. Right? Now we're throwing improv in as another optimal way to create more efficient outcomes or more results on the bottom line. You did a TED talk about how improv can improve your leadership and life. And I would love to have you tell me in your work, teaching improv, how can entrepreneurs adopt improv into creating better products, better companies, better services? Where have you found it to become the most effective part of the entrepreneurial journey?
Well, entrepreneurs are improvisers, whether they realize it or not, right? We're all figuring it out as we go and creating something from nothing. And I think there's two kind of routes you can take with using improv as an entrepreneur to improve yourself as a leader, your business. And one is quite tactical, right? So I work with a lot of entrepreneurs that are fundraising or trying to grow their business through sales. And that involves a lot of pitching, right? So I have three kind of core improv-inspired activities that I do with founders to help them improve their pitch with the content of the pitch and how they say it, the delivery of it. And that's just like very tactical, right? So there are specific improv techniques that entrepreneurs can use to improve. And then the other kind of direction is the mindset, the philosophy, the principles of improv are very helpful for entrepreneurs because, again, they are improvisers. So improvisers use these principles and practices to help them navigate uncertainty, kind of figure out and create things as they go along. Well, entrepreneurs are navigating uncertainty, figuring out things as they go along. So they can use those same principles to accomplish those same goals, though they're applying it in a different way. So that might mean like this whole principle of yes and, right, which is the fundamental principle of improv. It's not about agreeing with what's happening, but it's about acknowledging what's happening. So I like to give the example, and I think I might mention this in the TED talk of like, if the gelato, my first business was a gelato business. If the gelato case breaks and you have gelato melted everywhere, you need to first acknowledge that that has happened, that the gelato is melted, the case is broken, before you can actually go and fix it or clean it up, right? If I'm denying that that's happening and I'm like, oh, this isn't a problem, this isn't a thing, then I can't actually solve it. So that whole premise is critical for solving problems. It's also critical for coming up with new ideas. Because if you're an entrepreneur constantly being like, no, 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 and you're shut off to all these possibilities because you're too stuck in like your ways of thinking about something, you're gonna hit a wall. Because what works with a company of two won't work with a company of 20, won't work with a company of 200. Like, we have to keep evolving and keep growing. And to do that, we need to have that like yes and mindset and be able to like kind of let go of some control in some sense, which is somewhat contradictory because a lot of entrepreneurs are like very used to control and by their
process
entrepreneurs.
Driven and frameworks. Yeah, exactly. And you know, and Mary, I love the statement, yes and. So many people say yes, but, and it negates everything that they're saying. And we want to talk about mindset a little bit. so many people say yes, but, and completely shut themselves down from making more happen, which actually goes against what improv is all about. Because improv in its purest form is the pure, I would say in its purest form is creativity. Mm-hmm. It's yes, and what else can I add on to this? What else I can create on this? When you talk to founders who are like, Mary, I'm ready to pitch. I'm ready to do like the big swing at the Series B, $25, $30 million fundraising round, big size round. And you go, I'm going to teach you yes, and this is going to help you get it. And they go, yes, but.
Yeah.
How do you navigate that conversation and showcasing to them why saying yes, but limits their ability to get what they want?
Yeah. Well, there is an exercise that really demonstrates this, that if I'm working with a group of entrepreneurs all at once, and I have them do this exercise where I say, okay, I need you to plan a party, and you can only plan every time you respond in your little group of three, you can only say no, because, and then we see how far they get with planning that party. And we do it again. I'm like, okay, this time it's yes, but you can try to plan this party and you're saying yes, but. So they'll be like, oh, we can have a live band. And the next person has to say yes, but live bands are expensive. And they're like, well, you know, and they're trying to plan this party with just the yes, but response. And then we do it a third time and they say yes, and we see how far they get with this party. And we look at those three different parties that were planned, and inevitably the best party that's planned is the yes and party, right? And basically this demonstrates that the possibilities that open up when we say yes and in a way that shows we don't get anywhere by saying yes, but we truly can't move forward. And then one-on-one, right? It's just understanding, like, if it well, with this, you know, but then the investors will say this. It's kind of like, well, what if you changed your belief? Because like beliefs underlie all of this. If someone's saying yes, right, but they might believe this isn't possible. And if you believe that raising $30 million isn't possible, you are not going to raise $30 million. So we have to go back to, where did that belief form? And do we need to change that belief? Which is also using an improv technique that we do very uniquely at Improve, like around making new choices, right? Because you can't get new results without making new choices. And when we improvise, we're practicing making new choices. So we go back and like, how do we make a new choice about this belief so that we can get new results? And part of those new results is like, if you believe that it's possible, you will do the things that are possible in order to make it possible. If you believe it's not possible, you're not going to have a lot of motivation to email investors and reach out and go pitch. So you're not setting yourself up for success. So that's, and a lot of that is just, like I said, I'll use an exercise like I shared with the yes and, yes, but, no, because, or I'll be pretty frank with people. Very honestly, like, if you really don't think that you can raise this money, then why are you doing it? Like, it, you know, do you think you can raise money if you don't believe it's true? Like, what is the belief here? And oftentimes founders haven't really thought about that because they're busy doing other founder things, right? Building product, getting customers. Yeah. But at some point they'll get stuck. And that's when, if they come to me, we can use these techniques to help people get unstuck so that they can get in that yes and mindset and achieve those goals that are possible when you have that mindset.
There's a lot of founders that when they go and fundraise money, they like to prepare for all different types of scenario, which you could argue is improv. Mm-hmm. However, what I'm hearing you say is that when they say yes, but if they say this or if they do that, this anticipation that comes with fundraising, mm-hmm. what I have found is that people who want something will try to assume or plan what the other person is going to say to come up with the correct response. And it sounds like to me what you're saying is that by empowering the founder to get them into a creation mode, like yes because or a yes and,
mm-hmm.
it actually allows for them to expand more or be more expansive in the ability to talk more about their personal story or company. But from a strategic aspect, I'd love to talk to you more about how do you remove the worry that comes with basically what you're saying is going with the flow. Mm. Like, walk in there with your knowledge, walk in there with your story. Don't try to anticipate so much of what they're going to say, push back to you on.
Mm-hmm.
So to parse out the question in this, what's the difference between preparation in this scenario and anticipation? And like, where's the balance in that?
Yeah. Well, they are distinct, right? Because you can be prepared and absolutely need to prepare, right? Like if you have a speaking engagement or a performance, mm-hmm. Like prepare, right? And be prepared to adapt, like be prepared for things to go off script. And this is actually where the inspiration for everything I do now with Improve and Improv for Founders started, because I was working as an early stage venture capital and I saw founders come in to pitch, and then the investors would ask a question and they'd be like, okay, I'll get to that on slide 14. And they're like on slide 6, right? And that was a very like, no, because moment, right? Where it's just kind of like, they could have said, oh yeah, let me answer that for you. And then like gone back into their pitch. And the reality is a lot of the investments we made, and with anything, right, is like, when you connect with your audience, right? If you're an improviser on stage and you connect with your audience, or you're selling something, you connect with your audience, that doesn't always follow a specific script. And if you're too in your script, you miss those gifts or those opportunities that allow you to connect with that person. So if you're prepared and you know your stuff and you know every one of those slides and you know everything about your company, and then you can adapt. You don't have to tell your story in a certain way. Like if someone wants to hear something a certain way and you're connecting one-on-one, being able to be present with them, it's really about that presence of being with someone and navigating that. And if you're prepared enough, you can do that. It's preparation and trust in your trust in yourself kind of equates adaptability and the ability to improvise in the moment, because you can be very, very prepared, but you can, if you don't trust yourself to be able to kind of navigate in real time, then it's gonna come off as disconnected from your audience. If you're not prepared, but you trust yourself, then you might end up like kind of not actually kind of stumbling or telling things that aren't true. So you need preparation and you need trust that in the moment that you're there, you can just let go and be in that moment and trust yourself that you'll say the things you need to say and show up the way you need to show up.
The deviation from the script scares the crap out of founders when they comes into pitching. I have known that from experience. Like I've rehearsed this. I know it like the front and back of my hand. Like I know everything in this deck. Mm-hmm. And you just said something where a venture capitalist, another person completely sitting on the opposite side of the table, just may out of nowhere go, well, what about this?
Mm-hmm.
And founders freeze. They get so scared. They're like, oh my God, like I did not prepare for this.
Mm-hmm.
I am so frightened right now that like if I don't go in sequence of how I've rehearsed this thing for the last 3 months, like I'm dead in the water. With your work with Improve, getting a founder to feel more comfortable deviating the script, what would you say they need to start with to allow themselves to go more naturally in answering those types of questions and then going through the presentation, being able to be more lighter on their feet? As you know, probably like most venture capital firms, and actually correct me if I'm wrong, most venture capital firms value the entrepreneur a lot more than the actual product or service.
Yep. I like to say the best pitches are conversations. And if an investor pulls you out of your script, you're doing the right thing. Like you want that, because if they're just listening for you to end, they really don't care.
I mean, you know, it's like you want someone
to be engaged. It's not, I mean, obviously there's different contexts for this, right? If you're at a demo day or you're in like a kind of auditorium kind of setting and you're pitching like that, like let me separate this,
like
right?
One of those group, like the group pitches, right? Like a Y Combinator.
Techstars, right? If you have, that's, you know, then it's like, then we work on how do you make sure that you're saying something concise and clear and delivering in a way that's compelling so that you could get people excited to talk to you and set up those one-on-one calls. In a one-on-one conversation, though, that engagement is key, right? Because that shows someone's interested. That allows us as the founder, i.e. improviser, to be able to pick up on little gifts, right? Of there's maybe your product solves a problem that that investor has experienced firsthand and they get excited about it. And then you're like telling their own story and they're asking questions about that. And like, how would your product help me? This, that's amazing. We love that, right? Because ultimately, you know, people, you know, they invest in, they work with, they want to be around people that they have some sort of connection with. And so it's the first thing that a founder can do to your question to kind of be a little bit more comfortable if they get pulled off script is to reframe those interruptions as good things and not think of them as bad things.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I love that.
It is a gift. Like, see it in a different way, because if you're seeing it as a negative thing, then it's gonna create that tension in the body. It's gonna put you into that fight or flight in your nervous system. So start to see it as a positive thing and kind of make that new choice to react to it with gratitude and excitement and joy versus fear and anxiety.
I want to switch to authenticity.
Great.
You and I talked about this during the pre-call last time we had done the podcast episode, when we were just kind of connecting and exploring topics that we wanted to parse out for the episode. And right before we got on this one, you had said, I want to talk about improv empowers authenticity, because you and I had thought that that was a really great topic. And as I'm hearing you talk right now, so much, especially this show, is really putting under the microscope the power of authenticity, like how powerful it is. I believe we need to show up more for ourselves in the most authentic way. And I also think that authenticity is really the thing that binds us and connects us, is being yourself, is living your truth, is stepping out and saying and advocating for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to authenticity, though, I think something about improv that I have found super fascinating with it is that people get this new voice. There's like this new tone, this new words, this new empowerment, like behind what they're saying that they never would have had the courage to say before. I want to dive into this. In your work with founders, with people in the groups, even with yourself, where have you found that improv really unlocks people's true nature of who they are and what they really want to say or express to the world?
Well, the thing about improv is that it allows people to be themselves. It's like the safest place to be yourself, because by virtue of the environment of the rules we're all kind of abiding by in that space, like there's no judgment, right? We let go of that inner critic. We fire the judge. Everything that is said or done is taken as a gift, right? One of the core improv principles is take everything as a gift. There are no mistakes. So you can't mess up in improv. And so this is why it always kind of blows my mind that people are like afraid or intimidated to take an improv class, because I'm like, they're like scared. I'm like, the world is scary, but improv, you, no matter how you show up, you're embraced. Everything's yes-anded, right? And I think that is very free, and it can be uncomfortable at first because people aren't actually used to being showing up as themselves and expressing themselves in a cool way.
Yeah, well, are they scared because they think they're going to mess up or not be perfect?
I think people are used to, you know, we're used to this kind of way of thinking of we're good or bad at something, right? And it's like,
What if
you just are, right? And so the more we improvise and the more our own reactions and ways of showing up are embraced and supported and celebrated, the more we gain confidence in ourselves and how we show up and what we say and our responses to things. And so I think that's a big part of that, is like, it does start to build confidence in showing up authentically and as who you are, because you're allowed to get that positive reinforcement for showing up as who you are. Because in the real world, if you're showing up as your authentic self and people are judging you or you're getting criticism, it does start to, you know, hit that insecurity bubble.
Yeah.
But then you get that positive reinforcement in improv, it kind of builds that up again. So I think that's number one. And then number two, when we improvise, it strengthens our own intuition and our connection with our emotions, right? Because it's actually really much, it's really a gift to express ourselves with big emotions and really clearly and directly in improv scenes. And so for those people who may not actually know who their authentic self is or how they really feel about things, which was more my story, where I used to ignore some of my own feelings. And so I would react to things quite neutrally, right? Someone would do something and be like, okay, I'd be like, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd be like a 4. I'm just kind of like, whatever. But it wasn't like big emotions. But when we improvise, we're encouraged to feel our feelings and react big, which is maybe not how we're going to go in real life. But in doing that, over time, we build emotional awareness with ourselves. And in doing so, we can be in a more authentic relationship with ourselves and show up more authentically in relationship with others. So I think there's that kind of self-awareness, kind of tapping into our own authenticity on a personal side. And then there's the, how do we build that external safety through external reinforcement to be like, okay, I now feel like I can go be my authentic self out in the world because I've experienced what it feels like to be embraced and supported in who I am.
Yeah. And safety oftentimes for people who don't feel safe are looking for it in the external, right? They look for it in money and friends groups and jobs and security. And, you know, one of your talks that you did was, why is it so hard to talk about salary, especially at work? And it's so funny that you talked about that, the true expression of self, that if people actually go to work and start acting authentically like who they are, there always is that voice in the back of your head that it's like, if you're starting to act like you're on one or you disagree with something wholeheartedly, mm-hmm. there's a consequence. I'm going to lose that raise. I'm not going to get that promotion. That job that I've always wanted is just going to go away if I start acting in my truth.
Yeah.
And I find with what you're saying is that there's this notion that people so crave to be their authentic selves at work, especially in corporate. They like really want to be themselves. And Mary, they also at the same time are looking at it going like, well, what if I express my true opinions? What if I really do express like what I believe in and like what I'm not in favor of or in favor of? And I lose that job and I lose that pay raise. And so the salary thing, I want to dive into that because I honestly don't really know why it's so hard to talk about salary at work. I really don't. I think it's one of those conversations. It's like, is it a conversation we should be having more of? Is it a conversation that shouldn't belong when you're talking to coworkers about that? What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I kind of want to reference your last episode, the last episode I heard around vulnerability, right? And boundaries. And it's like, what was the quote that you shared by Brené Brown? Vulnerability without boundaries is oversharing. And I think there have been boundaries that have been set up by society to like not talk about certain things, and salary at work, one of them. And perhaps that's more, there's individuals who would be comfortable with it because no one else is. It's like one of those catch-22s of like, who shares first and how do we make this acceptable? And I think that societally, we're starting to get more transparent, you know, job postings will put salary ranges. But why people don't do it? Probably fear, right? I mean, fear underlies so many decisions we make. And I think that is a big driver as to why people don't talk about it. And perhaps that fear also holds people back from asking for a raise or sharing their opinions at work. And I guess my I myself have experienced that fear in multiple different types of work situations and just life situations. And the question I come back to for myself and the question I ask folks that I work with is like, well, what's the best that could happen, right? If you do ask. And then
that's
like
a powerful question.
Right? Like we so often think like, what's the worst thing that can happen? It's like, well, what's the best that can happen? You get that raise, or you know, someone respects your opinion. And then you ask, well, what's the worst that can happen? And it's like, okay, well, what would you do if in that case, right? And then you kind of give people that, they help you guide them. I guide them in discovering that they'll figure it out. They'll be able to handle anything. And so then there's that kind of preparation piece. And ultimately, by expressing ourselves authentically, whether it's asking for something that would, that we need or we want, or sharing an opinion that's important for us to share, or a perspective or an idea, that is a gift to the scene, right? Again, in this improv mindset, anything we say or do in an improv scene is a gift to the scene. It helps move the scene forward. We get information about the characters, what's going on. We can respond to that. By saying those things in our real life, in our real work, it's a gift, because whatever comes back, even though it's not in our control, which is another, you know, that's another piece of this around, we can't control how someone responds. We can control that we ask it and how we ask it, but how they respond tells us something about the environment we work in, about the person we work with. And then we get to make a choice, right? Because we have more information and we can say, okay, I asked for this thing and they said no, or they laughed at me, or they gave me all these reasons why, you know, I was wrong. And then I get to decide what I do with that. Do I, you know, do I continue to go down this rabbit hole? Do I say, okay, well, I can't meet my salary goals here, I'm going to go somewhere else. Like, but by saying that thing, by expressing it, that allows for that new information to come. And as long as we're not afraid of that new information and we trust ourselves and build that trust that whatever comes our way, we can handle it, we'll figure it out. But having more information can help inform how we figure that out. Then there's nothing to lose.
Yeah. You have everything to gain.
Everything to gain.
And it's one of my favorite sayings is, I have nothing to lose. It's not that I have nothing to lose. It's I have everything to gain.
Yes.
And speaking of everything to gain, as we get to the back half of the episode, or the last segment of the episode before we start winding down here, you have a new book coming out, How to Handle Anything. Very cool title. Great for YouTube videos. Great for blog posts. I assume it's going to probably be Google and searched a lot when this book comes out. But talk to me about the inspiration behind creating this book and what people can get from picking this book up when it drops.
Yeah. Well, the inspiration came during the pandemic, honestly, when a lot of my work changed and I found myself having to improvise in my own work and life in ways that I hadn't before and in ways many of us hadn't before, right? Because we experienced this very unprecedented global event. And I had kind of been percolating on writing a book for a while, and then I've written other books before, and this one was just, I sat down, I wrote it, it kind of flowed for me, and it was really born of this idea of like, what does improvising actually do for us, right? Because it is fun and games, that's what we see, and it's so much more. And we've talked about a lot of that here. And so when I really like brought it down to its essence about like, what has improv helped me and now the many others I've done this work with to do, it's handle anything, right? Because that's, if what is the superpower? It's the ability to handle anything, because we're all improvising. There's so much that's always changing and out of our control. And so the book was born as this, like, how can I share the tools of improv, the principles, the practices, the stories that can empower and inspire readers to be able to use them in their own lives so that they too can handle anything that comes their way. They can improvise and navigate the change and uncertainty just like an improviser would, right? With the yes and, with like taking everything as a gift, making new choices, like all of these things that improvisers use to handle uncertainty and navigate anything on stage, we can use to handle anything in our lives. So that was really the the inspiration behind it.
And I love how this book is really framing practical guidance of using the art of improv as a tool to navigate what's going on in our lives. I think, you know, you talk about, you know, the pandemic that happened in 2020, that was like the biggest curveball the world had ever seen. There was no playbook. There was no, it wasn't on the horizon. Like, people really didn't see it coming. Maybe some did, but most of us in the world didn't see any of that coming. And when it hit, a lot of people had to adapt very quickly. And one distinct experience that I remember from that time period was people who were in the public event space or in the in-person event space and their entire business going completely to shit because all of their revenue was from speaking engagements, doing 80 to 100 events a year, making $500,000, and there was no digital course. There was no nothing, and it all just went away. And people quickly moved into the transitioning of like digital products and diversifying their product lines. I also remember podcasting at that time had risen, had exploded because Zoom was the thing. So people were at home, couldn't work, and they were like, I'm starting a fucking podcast. And they just went into it. So it's beautiful how this book is really giving people the opportunity to really deal with unpredictability in the world. Mm-hmm. And I think if anybody who's listening to this right now is wanting to learn to integrate more into using improv to not just pitch, to sell to their customers, to come up with creative work, but also to navigate day-to-day life, this book is really going to help you. And with that being said, Mary, one thing I wanted to ask you specifically about this book is that, do you think improv is going to be an essential leadership tool moving forward for founders viewed from the lens of venture capital firms who are looking to invest?
I mean, I'm obviously a bit biased, but yes.
Yeah, that's okay.
And here's why. Because, and you alluded to this earlier, investors invest in the person, in the entrepreneur. And when I'm investing in an entrepreneur, I am believing that I know, because I've seen a ton of companies as an investor over many years, right, in the role of the investor, that things never go as planned. And there's going to be pivots and there's going to be challenges and there's going to be market shifts. So I'm betting on the entrepreneur that they can navigate anything that comes their way. I'm betting on them to be able to adapt, be resilient, be persistent, be driven to that, like, you know, what they're building towards their vision. So I'm betting on the entrepreneur to be a good improviser. And how do you become a good improviser? You practice improvising. And so that, I mean, with anything, right? If you want to be good at sales calls, you practice sales calls. If you want to be good at guitar, you play guitar. So if you want to be good at improvising and navigating change, practice improvising and navigating change, because it's a muscle. It is a skill set. And so absolutely, I think it's an important tool for entrepreneurs, because that's your job. Your job is improvising, navigating change, and doing so with this big vision and goals in mind. And as an investor, I want to see that my founders that I invest in are able to do that, because the road is not linear. Right?
No, it is. It is definitely not. And Mary, I have to tell you, as we get into the last question of the show, thank you so much for your time, your expertise, and your energy. You've been absolutely wonderful, and you've provided so much information for our listeners and including myself. So thank you again. We loved having you on the show. And everybody, please check out her book, How to Handle Anything. It's coming out really soon. We'll have links in the description on our YouTube channel and also in the show notes of the podcast. You guys can purchase your copy as soon as this episode goes live. With that being said, Mary, as you know, we ask every single guest on the show, what is their definition of living their truth? So, Mary, what is your personal definition of living your truth?
To me, living my truth means showing up honestly in each present moment. It's as simple as that. Acknowledging what is, whether an external situation or the internal experience, acknowledging what that is and accepting it without judgment and showing up honestly in that moment.
Well said, my friend. And thank you so much for sharing that with us. And thanks to all of you for tuning into this week's episode of Live Your Truth Now. If you like what you heard, go ahead and give us a follow on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your audio podcasts. You can also watch this episode and many more on my YouTube channel, Mike Ligori. Just search it on YouTube. You can go ahead and check it out and give me a subscribe. I would greatly appreciate it. So with that being said, I'll see you guys next week. Thanks for tuning in.